This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick in for John Hockenberry. We thank you so much for listening. The Islamic State says its chief spokesman, Muhammad al-Adnani, has been killed in an airstrike in the Syrian town of Aleppo. It's just the latest headline from a 5.5-year civil war in Syria. Earlier this month, people were horrified by the picture of a small boy who had been pulled from the rubble after a Syrian military airstrike bombed his home in Aleppo. That photograph sparked renewed interest in helping the Syrians still in that country. But aid to Syria might not be going to the best places. A new analysis from The Guardian shows that the United Nations has paid tens of millions of dollars in contracts to businesses and groups closely connected to the Syrian government or President Bashar al-Assad. A lot of this money goes to companies and individuals blacklisted by the United States and EU sanctions against the Syrian government. Now, the UN says that working with those businesses is necessary and that working with the Assad regime is necessary. Unfortunate compromises in a country where civilians need help. Meanwhile, other agencies working in Syria have spoken out. They've said the payments are aiding the Assad regime, which has killed hundreds of thousands of its own people in that country's civil war. Reynold Leenders is associate professor in international relations and Middle East studies at King's College London. And in an op-ed in The Guardian, he called the UN's aid in Syria morally bankrupt. Reynold, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi.
You've spoken out strongly, and we'll get to that, but how important is it for the UN to be able to send humanitarian aid into a war zone like this, even if they have to deal with an unsavory government?
Well, it's tremendously important. The Syrian crisis has brought about a humanitarian catastrophe of enormous proportions. There is an enormous need for humanitarian assistance, both in regime-held areas and in opposition rebel-held territories. So in that context, it's inevitable that you have to make some compromises, but it's important that you strike the balance right. And I think over the last 5 years, since the start of the war in Syria, the UN agencies have not gotten this balance right.
Is there evidence that this money is actually helping to prop up the Assad regime? In one case, millions of dollars have gone to fund blood banks, which are necessary, but now it's revealed that those blood banks are under control of the Syrian military.
I'm not too pleased with that example, because at the end of the day, you know, the state, the regime, has a monopoly on these blood banks. That's unfortunate, but there's very little the UN can do about that. But there are other sectors where UN agencies have been doling out contracts, very lucrative contracts, to Syrian suppliers, providing humanitarian goods and services that could have easily been purchased from other sources. And these same benefiting companies are owned by senior regime incumbents.
So you've referred to these arrangements as morally bankrupt, and that's a heavy charge because the UN itself says it recognizes that there are bad actors in the government and on the ground, but that civilians need help. It's a war, and in these cases, they have to deal with people who, in better circumstances, they wouldn't want to deal with. But the charge morally bankrupt kind of goes to another place.
Yes, it certainly does. It doesn't come out of nowhere, and it's not just based on what I found in terms of these procurement decisions. The procurement decisions come against the context, a history of 5 years of the UN cozying up to the regime in a very disturbing manner. It involves the human resource management, whereby regime incumbents, relatives of the very same people who are responsible for humanitarian violations and the catastrophe still unfolding in Syria, to use these relatives and give them a job in UN agencies operating from Damascus. UN agencies have allowed the regime to redact documents, needs assessments, and so on and so forth. And these revelations about procurement decisions come on top of all these failings, in my view. It's inevitable that UN agencies have to make concessions and have to find a balance to work in a complex situation like this. And sometimes they have to deal with unsavory characters. That's inevitable, both on the regime side and the opposition side. But just to systematically dole out, hand out very lucrative contracts to people who are widely known to be straight into the regime or linked to the regime, who are on sanctions list in the United States and in Europe. That is just not done.
One of the complaints that UN officials have had after all of this scrutiny is that when there have been attempts at more transparency, more scrutiny within Syria, that the Assad government just threatens to cut off the aid altogether. Don't get too close to this or else nobody gets anything. That's an awful threat, but people have said that that's what's at play here.
The Syrian regime is playing it very hard, is imposing a lot of demands and threatening and what have you. And they've done that since the start of this aid relationship in 2000 and early 2012. But there are some limits you have to put there. You can't just give in to every single demand that the regime is presenting to the UN. And frankly, I think the UN agencies have been underestimating, systemically underestimating their own leverage vis-a-vis the regime. Because at the end of the day, the regime is dependent upon the UN agencies as well for the provision of humanitarian aid in the areas that it controls. So to my knowledge, there has never been, the UN agencies have never used their leverage in order to get a better deal out of this.
Reinoud Leenders has been a stark critic of UN aid efforts in Syria, which he and many other critics say are aiding and abetting the Assad regime. He's associate professor in international relations and Middle East studies at King's College in London. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, as we've heard there, the United Nations can find itself in a position where it distributes aid into conflict zones, even while making those compromises in who it deals with. Civilians need help, but many critics argue that aid like this, whether from the UN or other international organizations or NGOs, don't necessarily promote stability in those countries. James Robinson is the director of the Pearson Institute for the Study and Resolution of Global Conflicts at the University of Chicago. James Robinson, welcome.
Hello.
First, your assessment of the situation in Syria and how the United Nations has been distributing aid.
Well, my impression, I'm not an expert on the details of it, but my impression is that, you know, this is just business as usual. I mean, this happens all the time, this type of thing. It, you know, it's just built into the kind of schizophrenic architecture of the aid industry.
So as we pull back then from the criticisms of the UN in Syria and the Assad regime, there's a broader concern here that in the micro sense, of course, aid helps people who need aid. But when you draw back, it may not be helping end the conflict. It doesn't promote stability.
I think that's right. I mean, if you look at some of the main documents which everybody signed up to with respect to foreign aid, such as this Paris declaration of 10 years ago, the first clause in the Paris Declaration says ownership. It's aid is about ownership. What does ownership mean? Ownership means the Assad government get to set the priorities. There are development partners, except the Assad government isn't interested in developing its country or raising the welfare of its citizens. And that's true in most poor countries.
So are there other examples then of places where this type of aid has gone in but the regime in charge or the despot or dictator who's running the government simply uses it for their own purposes?
Well, I mean, a wonderful contemporary example would be Rwanda. You know, if you look at the World Bank webpage, you'll find the World Bank is giving millions of dollars in agricultural support to Rwanda at the moment, a country where the dictator, Paul Kagame, just rewrote the constitution so he could stay in power forever, which is basically run by the army, an army responsible for probably hundreds of thousands of deaths in Rwanda and the eastern DRC. And what's happening in the rural sector? What's happening is forced cultivation of crops, forced corporatization of the people. You know, it's just a sort of egregious violation of people's rights and democratic principles. And it's all being funded by international donors and all for the benefit of consolidating the authority of the Rwandan Patriotic Front.
Is there a better way to do this in places like Congo or like Haiti, like Syria, like Rwanda? There isn't a case for not helping starving or homeless people. That has to be done. What can be done further out so that all of the aid and comfort, or at least some of it, doesn't go to a dictatorial government?
I think you're right. And I think as this discussion of Syria focused, you know, there's just very difficult trade-offs. I don't blame the people on the ground in Syria. You know, they're trying to get the stuff to the people who need it. And, you know, and they're functioning in this international environment which pretends that the whole business is apolitical. You know, this is one of the big problems, I would say, that yes, there are always these difficult trade-offs. But the first thing you have to recognize is the problem of poverty and underdevelopment and conflict is political. It's a fundamentally political problem. You know, if you look at the Articles of Association of the World Bank, it specifically says the World Bank can't do anything about politics. It doesn't care about politics. It doesn't look at the regime or who's in charge. And, you know, and in a fundamental sense, I'd say, you know, thinking about the political science of this, you know, we live in a world which is very Hobbesian. You know, Thomas Hobbes, who wrote in the 17th century, sort of said there's this thing called the state. And the state is legitimate, and it tries to exert authority and establish a monopoly of violence. And, you know, the world system is very Hobbesian today. Whoever it is who's in charge in Kigali or Kinshasa, you know, or Damascus or whatever it is, we regard them as the legitimate government. You know, we give them a seat in the United Nations. They have an ambassador in Washington, and we give them aid and money and support. And, you know, we somehow ignore the reality of the regime and what it's trying to do. And that's very fundamentally in the DNA of a lot of the international aid system, and that needs to change.
Possession on the part of these dictators and despotic governments so often means that aid that goes in goes right to their bottom line and contributes to political instability that was there at the beginning of the conflict. James Robinson is the director of the Pearson Institute for the Study and Resolution of Global Conflicts at the University of Chicago. Professor, thank you.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.